Welcome to SNC's podcast series, SNC Critical Insights. I'm Camille Shields. I'm a special counsel in Sullivan Cromwell's litigation group in our Washington, D.C. office.
And I'm Tony Lewis, special counsel in Sullivan and Cromwell's litigation group in our Los Angeles office.
And today we're going to talk about the False Claims Act, specifically the cybersecurity requirements that arise when dealing with the federal government. First, we'll talk about the cybersecurity climate as a result of the pandemic and employees working remotely. Second, we'll walk through why we see so many additional companies contracting with the government, including tech companies, as the government turns to private industry to deal with the healthcare and economic challenges that have arisen as a result of the pandemic. Third, we'll turn to the False Claims Act, including what the government must prove to assert a successful claim. We will then summarize some of the federal regulations that lay out the cybersecurity requirements for government contractors, as well as provide an overview of some of the recent False Claims Act cases. Finally, we will discuss some of the implications and considerations for companies to keep in mind.
As we know, cybersecurity has become one of the key concerns for the federal government in managing the COVID-19 crisis. With most people working remotely and relying on virtual private networks, company systems are increasingly vulnerable to cyber intrusions and attacks. Due to this reliance on remote computing and teleworking, individuals are more likely to be susceptible to phishing schemes and other fraudulent schemes designed to obtain personal identifying information or other sensitive corporate information. In the current climate, we are tethered more than ever to our computers, and the risk that cybercriminals will capitalize on our increased reliance on electronic systems and remote connections is high. Meanwhile, many companies are still adjusting or enhancing their cybersecurity posture to account for that and the risks it presents. With this increased focus on cybersecurity, today we discuss how cybersecurity requirements for government contractors come into play for False Claims Act liability with some of these current issues in mind.
The need for cybersecurity awareness has been placed to sharp relief by COVID-19, by the pandemic. Recently, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, also known as CISA, the U.S. Department of the Treasury, Internal Revenue Service, IRS, and the United States Secret Service issued a joint alert for all Americans to be on the lookout for criminal fraud related to economic impact payments that were sent to eligible Americans. Recognizing this increased likelihood of cybercrime, the federal government has adopted certain measures to show its commitment to cybersecurity in the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, also known as the CARES Act. Among other things, the bill does two things that are relevant here. First, it provides $500 million in funding for public health data surveillance and analytics infrastructure for modernization, including, among other things, to track the spread of COVID-19, and $9.1 million in funding to CISA. CISA is a standalone federal agency, oversight for which is housed in the Department of Homeland Security. The purpose of the funding to CISA is to support interagency infrastructure coordination. Second, the CARES Act amends the Public Health Service Act to include breach notification and consent requirements and notice of privacy practices that are consistent with the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, also known as HIPAA. These cybersecurity provisions highlight the increasing focus on the risks posed by cybercriminals. Companies should be attuned to those risks and the additional requirements certain companies will be subject to regarding safeguarding information under the CARES Act. As cybersecurity breaches or lapses are discovered, victim companies can expect their cybersecurity programs to be scrutinized. As we will discuss, the federal government's stringent cybersecurity regulations for government contractors that process information held by the government, which is also known as federal contract information, need to be considered by companies, as well as the requirements that apply to healthcare companies that find themselves submitting claims for reimbursement to the federal government in connection with pandemic-related relief. To submit a claim for reimbursement, these contractors, these healthcare companies, must certify that they meet the requirements and, among other things, that the services that they are providing are protected against a cyber attack. To the extent that these certifications that are provided are erroneous, a company may be susceptible to False Claims Act liability. False certifications are not the only basis for False Claims Act action, as we will discuss shortly. Companies, moreover, may not fully apprehend that all of the facets of their cybersecurity programs are implicated when they certify that they are in compliance with government regulations, and that they may be opening themselves up to liability under the False Claims Act.
So, broadly speaking, we expect to see more entities contracting with the government in light of the funds provided for data modernization, whether through the CARES Act or through other initiatives, and an increase in False Claims Act litigation. Indeed, recent reporting suggests that tech companies may also provide services to the government, including technology tracking the spread of COVID-19. There are public reports that the U.S. government is in active talks with tech companies regarding the use of location data that is captured by our phones to determine how populations are congregating and if that information might be used to combat the coronavirus. Additional press reporting has characterized the pandemic as having kicked technology acquisition in the federal government into overdrive. In this environment of increased federal contracting across the board, with new companies and sectors considering government contracts for the first time, it's important for companies to be aware of the risk of liability under the False Claims Act. This risk exists for any entity that contracts with the government, including through reimbursement for the provision of services or billing fraud. The False Claims Act, or FCA as it's known, imposes liability on those who make false claims for the payment of federal money. Many states and some cities also have their own False Claims Acts that prohibit the submission of fraudulent claims or contracts to the government. In addition to the federal False Claims Act, which is the focus of this podcast, 31 states and some municipalities have similar statutes. The False Claims Act actions can be brought by whistleblowers, called KITOM relators, on behalf of the Justice Department, or they can be brought by DOJ itself. These whistleblowers, who may be company insiders or executives, have a significant incentive to bring False Claims Act actions, as statutorily they can get up to 30% of any eventual recovery. Notably, about 72% of False Claims Act actions are brought by whistleblowers. The federal government purportedly recovered more than $3 billion in settlements and judgments as a result of False Claims Act cases in 2019 alone. False Claims Act defendants are liable for treble damages, or three times the actual damages, and they are required to pay a mandatory civil penalty for each false claim. The two primary False Claims Act provisions are the False Claims and False Statement provisions. While the false claims provision creates liability for knowingly presenting or causing to be presented a false or fraudulent claim for payment, the false statement provision creates liability for knowingly making, using, or causing to be used or made a false record or statement that is material to a false or fraudulent claim. So generally, to bring an FCA matter under either of these provisions, the government must show that a false or fraudulent claim for payment was made, that there was knowledge of the falsity of the information, and materiality. The FCA's definition of a claim includes reimbursement requests made to recipients of federal funds under federal benefits programs. An important point to bear in mind is that a claim can be false or fraudulent for a number of different reasons. In the paradigmatic case, as one court has said, a claim is false because it involves an incorrect description of goods or services provided, or a request for reimbursement for goods or services never provided. But the government can also demonstrate falsity via a false certification theory. In other words, that the defendant failed to comply with a statutory or regulatory requirement, such as the cybersecurity requirement we'll be discussing, and that they falsely certified, either expressly or implicitly, that it was in compliance with those requirements. An express false certification occurs when the defendant submits a claim that expressly certifies compliance with ancillary legal requirements. An implied false certification, or misleading omissions, amongst the largest category of false claims cases, occurs when a defendant makes representations in submitting a claim, but omits its violations of statutory, regulatory, or other contractual requirements. Those omissions can be the basis for liability if they render the defendant's representations misleading with respect to the goods or services that are provided. And that comes from the Supreme Court case of Universal Health Services versus United States ex rel Escobar. In that case, the court noted that this implied certification theory can be a basis for liability where at least two conditions are satisfied. First, the claim does not merely request payment, but also makes specific representations about the goods or services provided. And second, the defendant's failure to disclose noncompliance with material statutory, regulatory, or contractual requirements makes those representations misleading half-truths. The government also has to show the requisite intent. The standard to establish a False Claims Act matter is the knowing submission of the false claim. However, this element is also satisfied when the defendant is deliberately ignorant of the truth or falsity of the information supplied, or where the defendant recklessly disregards the truth or falsity of the information. Finally, the government has to show materiality, meaning that the falsity must be material to the government's decision to pay the contractor for the goods or services rendered. Accordingly, if the provider's representation about the contract or request for reimbursement are the reason that the government provides the funds, or if the government relied on the representation when providing the funds, that generally would meet the materiality threshold. The materiality is not technically required under the false statement provision. Courts consistently require a showing of materiality where the basis for falsity rests on a false certification theory. The FCA naturally has significant implications for government contractors. Doing business with the government requires certifications that you are equipped to do business with the government. The documentation supporting those certifications will be subject to scrutiny, particularly from whistleblowers alleging billing fraud. Perhaps one of the best ways to understand how strict regulations imposed on companies doing business with the government and the economic incentives encouraging whistleblowers can lead to FCA liability is through the cybersecurity framework. Later in the podcast, we'll talk about the Cisco litigation in which the Department of Justice recovered $8.6 million through a whistleblower action in which Cisco, a defense contractor, agreed to settle claims related to video security software that was vulnerable to intrusion, but that had actually not suffered a data breach.
We will now turn to certain cybersecurity requirements applicable to all government contractors. Notably, these requirements can even apply to contractors supplying goods or services that are unrelated to information technology. The major cybersecurity compliance requirements can be found in certain federal regulations. First, the Federal Acquisition Regulation, or FAR, Clause 52.204.21. This regulation is entitled Basic Safeguarding of Covered Contractor Information Systems. FAR applies to all covered contractor information systems that process, store, or transmit federal contract information. Basically, FAR covers any information provided by the federal government or to the federal government in connection with the performance of a federal government contract. It applies to all federal contractors, not just those in the defense industry. FAR requires contractors and subcontractors to protect information systems that process, store, or transmit federal contract information, FCI. If a contractor or subcontractor may have federal contract information residing in or transiting through its information system, the contractor or subcontractor must employ 15 basic security controls. Those controls relate to, first, limiting access to the information system. Second, controlling information. Third, identifying information systems users. Fourth, authenticating users. Fifth, sanitizing or destroying information system media containing FCI or federal contract information before disposal or release for reuse. Sixth, limiting unnecessary physical access. Seventh, monitoring and controlling organizational boundaries. And eight, protecting information systems and engaging in appropriate remediation. Turn next to the Defense Federal Acquisition Regulation Supplement, or DFARS. DFARS applies to solicitations and contracts with the Department of Defense for the acquisition of commercial items. DFARS is a supplement to FAR and applies only to sales to the Department of Defense. DFARS requires contractor information systems to comply with the cybersecurity requirements outlined in a specific National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, publication. These NIST requirements include processing, storage, and transmission standards, ranging from access control to configuration management to system and information integrity. Notably, DFARS also requires contractors to report cyber incidents to the Department of Defense within 72 hours. There's substantial overlap between DFARS and the FAR, but there are additional requirements under the DFARS. In addition, other agencies also have their own cybersecurity regulations that apply specifically to contracts with those agencies. Those agencies include the Department of State, the Department of Homeland Security, and the General Services Administration. In addition, there's an act that was passed on February 17, 2009, the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health, or HITECH Act. HITECH applies to covered entities. Those covered entities are health plans, healthcare providers, and healthcare clearinghouses, and business associates, meaning any person or entity that provides services to a covered entity. This framework started as a means for the Department of Health and Human Services, or HHS, to incentivize healthcare providers to transition to electronic health records. The Act includes regulations for handling electronic protected health information, PHI. Covered entities and their business associates are required to adopt policies and procedures under which they may disclose PHI to each other without authorization or consent if the disclosure is for healthcare treatment, payment, and healthcare operations of health plans, or if disclosure is required by law or under certain other limited circumstances. All other uses and disclosures are prohibited unless the individual whose PHI is involved authorizes the disclosure. Covered entities and business associates must notify HHS and the media if a large breach of such PHI were to occur. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services have promulgated cybersecurity standards to meet the HITECH Act objectives, including measuring protection of personal health information through compliance with access, encryption, and integrity controls. To receive incentive payments from the government, the healthcare provider must certify satisfaction of the objectives and measures that are outlined in the regulations.
The Department of Justice has been very willing to bring actions against government contractors that falsely certify their compliance with some of the provisions that Camille just discussed. For example, in the HITECH Act context, last year, Coffee Health Systems was alleged to have falsely attested that it conducted and/or reviewed security risk analyses in accordance with the requirements of the HITECH Act. And Coffee ended up settling the False Claims Act claims with the government for $250,000. In the DFARS context, Cisco Systems settled its FCA whistleblower action with the government for $8.6 million. The government alleged that Cisco sold and caused others to sell to federal agencies, as well as to state and local government entities, a video surveillance system that Cisco knew to possess dangerous, undisclosed, and impermissible security weaknesses. It states that Cisco has known of these critical security flaws for at least 2.5 years, and yet failed to notify the government entities that have purchased and continue to use the system of that vulnerability. The vulnerabilities were alleged to be non-compliant with the NIST framework, the cybersecurity framework of the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which was applicable to Cisco under DFARS. But notably, no breach or intrusion had occurred. The issue was that Cisco was aware of the potential vulnerabilities with the system that it provided to the government, yet it certified that it met the Department of Defense's cybersecurity requirements. Of the $8.6 million settlement, $1 million went to the whistleblower. In another case, United States XREL Marcus versus Aerojet Rocketdyne Holdings, a former employee of developers and manufacturers of products for the aerospace and defense industry, who sell to the Department of Defense and NASA, alleged that defendants violated DFARS and NASA-specific cybersecurity requirements for sensitive, unclassified information because defendants' computer systems failed to meet minimum cybersecurity requirements to be awarded contracts funded by the Department of Defense or NASA, and yet fraudulently entered into contracts with the federal government despite knowing that they did not meet the minimum standards required to be awarded a government contract. The Eastern District of California held that the False Claims Act conspiracy claim did not survive, but that the relator adequately stated claims alleging promissory fraud or false or fraudulent statement or record in violation of the False Claims Act. So now we'll talk about some of the implications of this discussion. One of the most significant takeaways is that having shortcomings in a cybersecurity program can lead to liability, even where there is no breach. This illustrates the importance of having an up-to-date cybersecurity program and reviewing it in light of the past and periodic certifications that need to be made, and examining it in light of the current state of affairs where many companies' workforces are connecting remotely. It also underscores the importance of having mature and well-advertised confidential reporting channels or whistleblower hotlines. It is important to broadcast their availability and to timely review, investigate, and when appropriate, escalate confidential complaints that are made. That is particularly the case for companies that are the subject of the FAR and or DFARS, who may be able to address cybersecurity or other issues in the first instance internally, rather than learning about them for the first time through a regulatory inquiry or court proceeding. Finally, no company wants to find that it was the victim of a breach, and navigating the response to one can be intense and complex. In addition to regulatory inquiries and civil litigation, companies that have made certifications regarding their cybersecurity practices and who are under an obligation to notify the federal government can expect that breach notification may draw scrutiny to their cybersecurity representations, their cybersecurity program, and may lead to potential exposure under the False Claims Act.
Thank you for listening to SNC Critical Insights. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.solcrom.com.